Chicago, this is your new morning routine. Cap and J-Hood. Follow Cap J-Hood on Twitter and Instagram. Stream the show on the new ESPN Chicago app. Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago. Now, on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. David Kaplan and Jonathan Hood.
Woo! Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out, bring them out. Woo! Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out.
So we had a full Monday of college buckets. I headed home. I was home by 11:15. Bam! We get a game. The unfortunate thing, Danny Z, is Danny's in for Hoodie, who's on vacation. Enjoy your vacation, Hoodrow. Every game was a blowout yesterday, finishing with your Jayhawks looking like a junior college team.
My Jayhawks played yesterday?
Yeah.
I had no clue. You know, when the bosses asked me and you gave the green light for me to co-host and sit in here with you today, I was honored. I thought it was nice. Now that I look back, and you know, hindsight's 20/20, I think it was a cruel joke. Like, somebody had a crystal ball, and they knew, listen, Kansas is going to suffer their worst loss of the Bill Self era. Let's get Zetterman in that chair so all the Loyola fans and all the Sister Jean lovers can say, take that, Danny Z.
Sister Jean, I love that. Well, that will be living on forever.
Hey, Sister Jean!
That was one of the players.
Kansas needs a Sister Jean. I'm looking for like a Rabbi Schwartzberg to be their version of Sister Jean if I can find him.
Like, I watched that game, so I bet the over. The over is 136.5.
What did I tell you yesterday in the meeting? I told you to bet the under.
You did. And so I'm looking at it. I'm doing my, I have a couple analytics sites, and they are projecting 141 points in the game. I'm like, all right, I got a little value there. I'm going to play the over 136.5. And then the great thing about gambling in today's world, you can go like on PointsBet, it says pick your spread, pick your line, and you just pay more juice. So I buy it down to 134.5. Thank goodness some walk-on hit a free, two free throws for USC because it ended up 85-51, 136. If I don't buy it down, I lose.
Well, I'm glad you cashed a ticket on my misery. I'm happy
God,
for you with that.
God, were they bad. Every game was bad yesterday.
Every game was bad. I will say, I was into the Gonzaga-Oklahoma game just because, first of all, Gonzaga's fun to watch.
How good is that kid inside?
Timmy.
And then
Drew Timmy.
And then Suggs is going to probably go number one.
Absolutely.
He's a beast.
If not Cade Cunningham from Oklahoma State.
One of the two.
That kid is really good also, and he's a class act. But I enjoyed watching Gonzaga because it's such a good team, and if they don't win this year, I don't think they're ever going to win because this has got to be the best team they've ever had. But Oklahoma fought back. I mean, they really fought back. So there were times in the second half that was a good game. But listen, I waited the whole entire day for my Jayhawks to take the court. Within the first 6 minutes, the game was over. I think we were 1-for-12 on our first 13 shots. Evan and Isaiah Mobley looked like dominant beasts of Twin Towers. It reminded me of David Robinson and Tim Duncan down there, what they could do. But they could shoot threes. And this is a question that I want to ask you about that, right? So, because you were a college basketball coach. You spent your early life all in college basketball. How is this allowed? USC hires their dad. Basically, in essence, yes, basically in essence to get them to come there. Mm-hmm. And you see this happen throughout college basketball. Missouri did that with Michael Porter Jr. I was talking to Tyler Aki, who's our producer here today. He listed off like four or five instances in college basketball where that happens. How is that legal? And this isn't sour grapes. I'm not bitching because Kansas lost. But it seems as if I'm going to hire you, David Kaplan, and pay you an exorbitant salary so I get Brett Kaplan.
Right. That's been going on for years. So there's a kid at UMass who just entered the transfer portal because he's a pro, Trey Mitchell. They hired his assistant coach like a year ago. They hired his high school coach to be the assistant, and the high school coach is engaged to his mom. So he brought him with him, brought the mom with, brought two other players with him. Like, that goes on all the time. Guess what? I'm going back to college coaching. Danny's got twins that are 6'9", and I'm bringing Danny in as the assistant. Is he qualified? Who cares? He's bringing me two pros.
But isn't that a backdoor way to pay? Like, Evan and Isaiah Mobley could have gone probably anywhere they wanted, right? But USC hires the dad. That's a backdoor way of paying the kids.
Yeah.
They give the dad a big salary. Hey, bring your sons over, and we're even.
But the dad was has a basketball background.
And Kansas did it back in 88. Danny Manning only went to Kansas hired his dad.
You ever heard of Ed Manning?
Of course. I'm very familiar. It just, you know, yes, maybe it is sour grapes. I was sitting there stewing over the fact that this team was just kicking the bleep out of my favorite basketball team. But I thought to myself, this is some backdoor way of getting the best players in the country.
Right. And they were five-star recruits. Evan Mobley's a beast.
Isaiah was better last night. Yeah. Evan Mobley was the one that I knew more about going into the game.
He was more highly regarded.
Exactly. But Isaiah Mobley was dominant yesterday.
So, yeah, look, that's how you get around it. But the thing is, so when those kids head to the pros, do you keep the dad or you go, no, now you're out. I got to go get a new assistant.
Well, I think if the dad earns his stripes, right, if you hired him to get the boys there, but if he's actually a good coach and he's benefiting you, why not keep them?
That was fun yesterday to have games. So did you like having games on a Monday? I loved it, but I have an odd schedule. Most people don't get up at 4 a.m. Most people aren't done with work on the radio at 10. We're out here, what, 10:45 every day? It's odd. I loved it. I just wish the games were more competitive.
I loved it also. For me, listen, I went home. My kids are home on spring break. I put on the games, and I had them up all day. I was really into it. But I went to take my son to his basketball last night, and there were a bunch of dads there. And most of them were complaining that, listen, that having the tournament on a Monday isn't good for work schedules. I know a lot of people are home with the pandemic and Zooming. But even if you're Zooming, you can't fully pay attention to the game that's going on, even if you have it in the background. I would assume more people would be upset with it being on a Monday than enjoyed it like you and I did.
Yeah, I thought it was great. So now we wait till the rest of the weekend. I think the teams that are left are staying in Indy.
Yeah.
And they'll be quarantined and all of that.
Locked in their rooms getting ready for the weekend. Listen, if you make it to the Sweet 16, it's worth being locked in your room, right?
I guess. I mean, they're saying some guys are having a tough time with it. Like, it's not as easy as it sounds.
Well, I mean, you're dealing with loneliness, right? You're dealing with isolation. You're dealing with not the norm. I guess if you were an introvert or you like to play video games, I guess you could make it through the day a little bit easier than somebody that wants to be on campus or talking to their friends or with their roommates or with their parents.
We talked to Porter yesterday. He was pacing his room, and that was what? Yesterday.
Right. He said we get 1 hour where they walk him out where no one's around them. He goes, I feel like I'm in the prison yard.
Yeah. Recess.
Yeah. Recess.
We had Bill Self on, and he talked about his only exercise was walking around that mall or whatever it was inside, right, instead of getting outside.
Correct. Where no one could be around him. He's all masked up, and they get tested at minimum once a day. So we'll see how this all shakes out. Hopefully we don't have any more teams that have to drop out because of COVID like VCU.
Let me ask you a question. What's your favorite team in the entire world?
The Cubs.
The Cubs, your favorite team in the world. When they lose in the playoffs, what does that feel like to you?
Last year when they lost in the 60-game season, I didn't think they were a very good team. I thought they were okay. They made it, whatever. So I wasn't heartbroken. When they lost in 89, 98, 03 was devastating. 07, 08, losing the NLCS in 15. Like, yeah, it sucks. Like, I'm crestfallen for a couple days.
It's like last night's Kansas game, they were being blown out from start to finish, right? From jump ball to the buzzer, Kansas pretty much had no shot.
Yeah, you knew it was over.
You knew it was over. You knew it was over at halftime. Watching that game, I was trying to, like, my emotions going through it. Obviously, you don't want your favorite team to lose, and obviously it's a sad situation when they do. But as I was watching the second half and they were just barrel rolling us, it felt as if I was watching my college roommate sleeping with my girlfriend. Like, the feeling it was making me sick. I couldn't turn away. I couldn't, like, I knew it wasn't going to go my way, and I wanted to turn it off, but I couldn't stop. It was, like, the emotions of your favorite team losing are a weird thing.
It is. And especially when you're down, like, you hate when they're at, like, in the sixes and you're in the threes. Like, if it's 59-40, you're 19 down, but when it's 60-39, you're like, It just feels worse. And then you make two quick baskets. You're like, all right, here we go. Let's make a run.
It's heartbreak, like, you know, losing a significant other, like breaking up with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or, you know, losing a job. Maybe that's why we're in this business, because we feel that emotional about it. But I would wonder if everybody feels that way.
Yeah, I'm curious. Do you feel emotion when your team – I like all Chicago teams. Like when the Bears lost the double doink, like I was literally devastated. I really thought, we're going to beat the Eagles. We got a good shot to beat the Rams again after we just dominated them in Chicago. And who knows? Like, I had this path. We could get to the Super Bowl here. Oh, my God, with that defense, we might win the Super Bowl. And then that field goal bounced around and fell out. And I heard Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth's call. And I was, like, for 2 days, I walked around, like, I cannot freaking believe that just happened. I can't.
Isn't it directly proportional to your expectations? Danny, how far did you think Kansas was going to go this year?
To be honest with you, JR, this was a down year for Kansas. They were still a 3 seed, but it was a down year, and I knew they didn't have that one go-to scorer that was going to carry them on their back. So although, of course, on my bracket I have them winning it all, I didn't necessarily think they would. But as I saw Iowa go down, and I saw the bracket kind of shifting in a way where I thought to myself, all right, if they beat USC, they could probably go on to beat Oregon and then maybe play Gonzaga. So I had high hopes, but it's different because it's unconditional fandom that I have for KU. Like, Kat brought up the Bears. When the Bears lose in the playoffs, it's easy for me to come in the next day and bitch about them and want Nagy fired and be mad about my fandom. I never feel that way about Kansas. I feel unconditional love. Oh, man, we lost. That stinks, but we'll be back next year. I don't want anyone fired. I don't want to make major waves. It's a much more unconditional love I have for Kansas.
Yeah, and it courses through your veins. It just does. And by the way, this day in 1963... Do you know what happened?
March 23rd, 1963.
Mm-hmm. Manchester
team! Loyola won the national title.
Did it? Really?
How about that?
Boy, look at the way Sister Jean just ties it all together.
Manchester team!
That's it. Take that, Danny. All right, did you like having a full slate of games on a Monday? Were you watching yesterday? And do you like getting your team out there because you can get your heart ripped out? 312-332-3776. We'll play Zed Winked because hoodie's off at 735. Albert Breer at 8. A whole lot of fun. Twitch sponsored by the Marquee Sports Network. Dial us up at twitch.tv/ESPN1000 Chicago. Be right back.
Cap J Hood.
Our new morning show.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
It's over. The Trojans take it to Kansas. USC is on to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2007. A blowout, 85-51.
And Bert, this was the most impressive performance we've seen in called. This weekend, USC.
They were obviously more prepared. They played better, coached better. We shot it miserably. And it's going to be hard to score for us over that length regardless. But they shot it unbelievably well. Even early in the game, in the first, 10 possessions or whatever, we had some looks, didn't make any, and they made some. And we played from a hole the entire time. But that's about as poor as we can play. And I'm sure Andy would say that's, certainly one of their better moments, better games. So it was a bad combination all the way around for us.
That was Bill Self after you heard the broadcast from the CBS crew last night. Blowout. Blowout. Kansas, one of the blue blood programs, gone. 85-51. USC had lost 7 consecutive games to the Jayhawks. Mobley, Eric Mobley, 10 points and 13 rebounds last night. And Isaiah Mobley is his brother, and the dad, Eric Mobley Sr., has been the assistant for 3 years. So They put together quite a little program over there.
People on Twitter, because I brought up Michael Porter Jr. at Missouri, how they hired his dad. People on Twitter are telling me that as soon as Michael Porter Jr. left, his dad was out.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that was by the dad's choosing or Missouri's choosing.
Correct. But let me tell you something. Michael Porter Jr. was like a really, really well-regarded prospect. Then he got hurt. He had the back issue and a hip issue. And that's when the Nuggets rolled the dice. I give Black all the credit in the world. He's like, roll the dice, take a shot in the draft. And the Bulls were scared of the medicals, among others. They weren't the only one. And he slid down the draft board, and now he's a damn good player, man.
Great, great player.
Yeah.
He's having a hell of a year.
Great player. So, 312-332-3776. So Danny asked a great question. When you watch your team, like for me, it's the Cubs number one, the Bears number two. I remember being at the Blackhawks game in 2014. Game 7, they have a 2-0 lead, Western Conference Finals, they won it in 13, they won it in 15, they should have won it in 14, they had a 2-0 lead, and we're like, I think we're going to the final again, and tie game, they go to overtime, and I think it was Alec Martinez off of Nick Leddy's shoulder, deflected one pass, Corey Crawford, and you sit there for a second like a spear in the heart. It's like, oh my God.
It's an unusual feeling when a team that you, like, live and die for, not literally live and die for, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
That team is your passion. That's why you follow sports. And when they're just getting their teeth kicked in, the feeling in the pit of your stomach, and I experienced it last night. Listen, I didn't really know much about USC. I knew about the Mobley guys. I knew they were good on defense. I didn't expect them to come out and shoot 61% from three, and I didn't expect my Jayhawks to shoot 29% for the game, right? That wasn't supposed to happen, but as I sat there watching it, it was an emotion that took me back to getting dumped by a girl that I was really into, or was an emotion that I felt like when I didn't get that job I really wanted. And I'm thinking to myself, this is just sports. This can't be healthy for me, but I'm sure I'm not alone when it comes to that.
Yeah, but When I take myself back to when I was coaching, we were playing at Western Michigan. We were not very good. They were not very good. And we needed it to get to the tournament. We just weren't that good. And I remember they had this guy in the corner and the clock's running down. And he literally just flipped it over behind his head almost from the deep corner. And that ball was in the air. And I remember having that sick pit in my stomach like, that's going in. And it beat us at the gun. We're out. Done. See you later. That's like a spear in the heart because you put so much into the prep. But it's equally bad if you're a fan.
No, I got to assume that being a coach is worse because that's actually your livelihood, right? And you actually know the players on a personal level.
Right.
So, like, you know, me, I'm upset that Marcus Garrett loses like that, but I don't know him and he doesn't know me and there's no connection. When you know the players, and it also hurts because you're a fan of the team and you know the players and you know the blood, sweat, and tears and the work they put into it, that's got to be more gut-wrenching.
Yeah, but I'll give you this. As a coach, so you go on to the next job, okay? You're the head coach at Illinois. They get beat. Then you take the Kansas job, Bill Self. Now you're a Kansas guy. He was at Oral Roberts. He's an Oral Roberts guy. If you're a diehard from the day you're born, that's your team. That's number one in your heart. For me, the Cubs. Hey, man, Theo goes on to his next job. I'm not saying he didn't put heart and soul into it. Players go from team to team. The fan is always there.
Always there. Seinfeld has a funny bit that we root for laundry. Fans root for laundry because the guys change jerseys all the time. We root for the name on the front. We root
Correct.
For the laundry.
Like the Cubs course through my veins.
Well, until the this Bears. Year. You're kind of a Sox fan this year.
No, I bought 15-game package and I have a good time with it. I'm not going to root. I'm going to root for them. Oh, my God. But I will always, number one, be a Cubs fan. If the Cubs and Sox play, it will be Cubs. If the Sox are playing anyone else, I'll root for the Sox.
See, I don't have the ability to root equally for two teams in the same sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're a Cubs fan and now you're becoming a Sox fan. I would assume then every time they play, you're rooting for both of them to get the win.
Whereas, no.
If they're not playing each other. So, like, if the Sox have a 3-game series with the Twins and the Cubs have a 3-game series with the Brewers, I'm going to assume you're rooting for both of them to go 3-0.
Correct.
I don't have that in me. I can root for one team. The Cubs are my team, and I want every other team in baseball to lose that day.
Yeah, I can go for both. But if you tell me it's Cubs Sox, yeah, I'm all Cubs.
See, I'm far more petty than that. If I root for one team, then I have to hate everything else.
Wow. All right, let's go to the phones. 312-332-3776. BJ is listening on our app. Hey, BJ, what's going on, man?
Cap, Danny, good morning.
How you doing?
Diehard Chicago fan. Good. How are you guys?
Good.
Diehard Chicago Bears fan, so I listen to the show, but Danny may be familiar with the Northern Iowa Panthers,
and
not about the Kansas game, but I'm calling about a couple of years back. We were lucky to make the tournament, beat Texas, and I was there in Oklahoma City. We beat Texas on a half-court buzzer beater, best game I've been to in my life, and then the next game, we lose in an old-time fashion, up 12 points with about 42 seconds left, and just crumbled. Maybe the worst loss of all time. And you don't expect to win, but when you see it in your grasp and you lose that game, it's like you can't breathe, and you feel the fans around you. I don't know if it's disappointment, but it's more like anger when you are that close, and you just can feel the lead boiling down, and you almost know when it gets down to 6 points, you're going to lose the game.
Yeah,
and then LeBron James tweets at you and tells you your team should quit basketball.
I forgot about that. Yeah, you did do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, man, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, I was laughing. Mindy and I and my friend Ryan McGuffey were watching the games together last night. And McGuff said, Danny's not going to be happy tomorrow. His team didn't even lose at the buzzer. They got destroyed. Would you rather have lost with a spear to the heart on a three-pointer at the buzzer? Or just, I can go to bed because I know it's over.
No, I would have rather lost a close game. At least if my favorite team put up a fight, right? They showed a pulse. They showed why they were the 3 seed. They showed at least enough heart that I could come in today and feel proud of them. I think I would take that with a grain of salt. I never want to lose, but if you're going to lose, at least play your hardest and show some heart. But you know what I'll tell you about that loss yesterday? You find out who your real friends are. You were nice. You didn't text anything either way. I had some friends texting me that were caring, like, hey, I'm sorry, man, tough loss, whatever. I had other guys, like Silverman, texting me, WTF, Zetterman, what's going on with your team? A lot of people like that who I felt took some kind of joy in the fact that I was miserable.
Sylvie is a guy who, when they said, as they were, the good Lord was putting you together, okay, get your arms here, get your legs there, step there for empathy, he went, yeah, I'll pass.
I'm not one to talk, though, because you know me. I'm not the most empathetic person.
You're not.
But I don't rub it in. Like, I wasn't texting Illini people on Sunday being like, ho-ho, take that, Loyola. Like, I understood where they were coming from. And you could tell on a day when your favorite team's losing who's with you and who's against you.
Yeah, no question. 312-332-3776. Let's go to Tom in Oak Lawn. Hey, Tom, what's up, Sparkles?
Hey, what's up, guys? So, first of all, I didn't mind having the tournament games on Monday for a change, mainly because it worked in my advantage because my little guy does remote learning on Monday, so I work from home on Monday, so it works out for me. But, going forward, I prefer the Thursday through Sunday kind of schedule.
Yeah, and I think secondly, we'll get that back.
Yeah. Secondly, just like you guys, whenever my team loses, especially like in a playoff game and such, whether it's the Bears, whether it's the Blackhawks, whether it's the Sox, whether it's Notre Dame, and with me, it doesn't matter if they lose the close game or if they get blown out or whatever. It is devastating, either feeling. So I feel for you, Danny, and I'm especially since I had Kansas going, in my Sweet 16, so that kind of hurt me that way. So I feel for you, man.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you supporting me on this.
Sister Jean paid him back, man. I'm just telling you.
Hey, Sister Jean!
That's Sister Jean in stereo. I'm just telling
you. Well, you saw her respond to Tyler's tweet, though. She wants all the smoke, so she's ready.
She is ready, 100%. I found out this weekend, she used to do the football picks on WGN with Spike Odell, and then North grabbed her, and she was doing the picks for North and Jiggets, and then she became, like, larger than life, Sister Jean.
See, so I'm not far off that she likes the media attention.
She does.
Sister Jean!
Like, listen, I'm not going to bash Sister Jean because my whole stance
is... Yeah, because now that she's taking out Kansas, now you're afraid she's going to, like, blow out a tire on your car as you're driving home.
If she has that much power, maybe she can make coronavirus go away, huh? How about you use that power for something more special? My whole take is not anti-Sister Jean. It's anti the media attention she gets over the team. I got to clarify that because everyone thinks I don't like her. She's a sweet 101-year-old woman that reminds me of a grandma. I have no problem with her. My problem is the headlines that says Sister Jean's Loyola Ramblers to the Sweet 16. It's not her Loyola Ramblers. She's got zero to do with any of the success on the court. If you're a religious person and you want to say she prayed for him, okay, I'm not going to take that away from you. But I don't believe that has an effect.
Look, she is something that people have gravitated to. She's sweet. I've met Sister Jean. I've been doing games around there for 25 years. She always gives the people love it. They gobble it up. Obviously, they're getting clicks on the stories.
I'm not anti-Sister Jean. I'm sure she's sweet. Like, that's what everyone comes back. I met her. She's super sweet. I'm sure she's a grandma. I'm sure I would love everything about her. I just don't like...
I don't think she's a grandma.
You know what I mean. Like, grandma-like. I'm sure I would love to hang around and meet her. I just don't like your TV station tweeting out the Battle of Illinois with Io's face in one state and her face in the other. Like... Oh, I'm sorry. Cameron Crudwig doesn't deserve his face there.
312-332-3776. Phone lines hopping. We'll put a twist on Hoodwinked coming up. Hoodies on vacation. We're playing Zedwinked. Be caller 10 right now. 312-332-3776. You'll get golf for you and your friends at Sanctuary Golf Course. 312-332-3776. All next.
It's Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's Home for Sports. Follow the show on Twitter, at Cap J-Hood. This is ESPN 1000. All right, Cap and J-Hood listeners, who's ready for a story? Sit back and relax as Jonathan Hood regales you with tales of frivolity. Did it really happen?
We have been hoodwinked.
Who knows?
Bamboozled, led astray.
Who cares? Be prepared to be
run amok and flat out to sea.
Hoodwinked.
We don't get fooled again.
All right. Hoodwinked is brought to you by the Sanctuary Golf Course. You get gift cards to play golf, get your cart. The course is awesome. I think you've heard Waddle and Sylvie talk about it. Those guys got more swag from that place, and it's awesome stuff. They got a great pro shop there. The course is beautiful. And so we play this every Tuesday at 7:35. It's called Hoodwinked. Mikey wants to know on Twitter, why don't we call it with you in today and Hoodie on vacation? Dan Boozled.
Oh, I like that.
That's a pretty good name.
Very well done. That's what we'll call it today. Dan Boozled.
Dan Boozled. He said Zedwinked. I'd go with Dan Boozled. All right, so we've got Wayne on the northwest side. He's our contestant. Wayne, you ready to rock and roll?
Yes, I am, Cap. How's it going, man?
It's going well, kid. Here's the deal. So you and I are going to listen to this story. We will then talk about it, but in the end, I make the call. If I'm right, I think I'm 4 out of 5 since we started this segment against Hood. If I'm right, you get the golf, okay?
Okay.
All right. Danny, the floor is yours.
All right, gentlemen, let me take you
I think USC just scored again. Go ahead.
Really? This is how you want to kick off Dan Boozled?
Yes.
Taking a shot at my ribs. All right, gentlemen, let me take you to Wrigley Field Monday, August 20th, 2018. My evening began as many who went to Wrigley Field to see Pearl Jam. We were packed in the bowels of the friendly confines as the rain started to fall on the ground. We were thinking to ourselves, boy, oh boy, are they going to get this show off. Luckily for us, the skies opened. Our friend Tracy Butler cleared the air for us, and we were able to make our way to the seats. Now, thanks to David Emmanuel Kaplan, this radio station has a very nice relationship with one Eddie Vedder.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Vedder and Randy Merkin, the associate program director, who is a good friend of the show, has somehow Merkin and Vedder text. And Merkin texted Vetter, Vetter texted Merkin, and Vetter arranged for many of us at this station to have tickets to see the Pearl Jam concert at Wrigley Field on this day. I had three tickets, one for me, one for my wife, one for my brother-in-law. We made our way to the seats after the rain stopped. We had three seats, amazing seats. Eddie Vedder's wife was right in front of us. That's how good the seats were. My brother-in-law sits on the aisle, my wife next to him, me next to her. That's three seats. There were 12 more seats in the row because there were a total of 15 seats per row. As it gets closer to showtime, guess who walks towards my row but the one and only Theo Epstein. Of course, Theo is not alone. He is with a group of people. Now, there's 12 open seats next to me, so one would assume Theo would have 12 seats or 12 people or less.
Correct.
However, Theo had 15 people for 12 seats. And he makes his way in, makes his way in. He sees me. I see him. He kind of looks at me as like maybe he knows me. I don't think he does. So I say, hey, Theo, Danny Zetterman. I'm Dave Kaplan's radio producer. How are you? He's like, oh, Danny, how are you? Good to see you. Have a good show. As he realizes he has more people than seats in the row, he circles back and he says to me, hey, Danny, are these your seats? And I'm like, yeah, they are my seats. Pretty good, huh? And he goes, do you mind if I see your ticket stubs? And I said, Theo, this is my favorite part of the story. I go, Theo, I didn't go to Yale, but I could figure out where I'm sitting. And he goes, ah, let me just see the stubs. He looks at my stubs. Sure enough, those are my seats. Well, he doesn't send three of his people out of the row. He just lets us all cram together. So now at this point, we've got 18 people in a 15-seat row, and we're uncomfortable. But it's not done then, because four more people show up to Theo's row and squeeze their way in.
No
and now at this point, Theo has 19 people in a 15-person row. Me, my wife, and my brother-in-law are squeezed and uncomfortable. And what can we say because it's Theo Epstein and his ballpark?
It's his building.
Wayne and Cap, I ask you, are you being Dan Boozled?
Okay, so Wayne, I was there as well at this concert. And Eddie Vedder, full disclosure, like I was not the biggest Pearl Jam fan. There were a few songs, Better Man, and he had that cute Cubs song, Someday We'll Go All the Way, but... like, Bruce Springsteen's at a different level for me. Right. And his shows are amazing. I've seen him a billion times. I go to see him in 2016. Cubs haven't won yet. And I'm literally got, he's playing Someday We'll Go All the Way. He has Ron Santo's kids. He has Jose Cardinal in his jersey up there. He's in a Cubs jersey. And I literally, I have it on tape. My wife and my friend Ryan McGuffey taped me. Literally tears rolling down my face. Oh, my God. It's a gorgeous summer night in my favorite city in the world where I grew up. And the Cubs are in first place. And I think they can win the World Series. It was emotional. I went in 18. He puts on a spectacular show. But I was standing on the field in the 2015 playoffs. Had not seen Eddie Vedder yet. Danny thinks he's like the Pope. This guy walks up to me. I don't know who he is. He's like, hey, man, I watch you and Hollinsworth on the post game all the time. I'm like, oh, thanks. Appreciate that. And he kind of looks at me, and I said, yeah, we got a great team, and I walk away. And someone goes, do you know who you were just talking to? I said, yeah, he's a guy who watches us. He lives out of town. He goes, hey, idiot, that's Eddie Vedder. I'm like, oh, God.
Did you know who Eddie Vedder was when he said the
yeah,
name
I knew
just
the name.
By name?
I knew the name. So I ran back up to him. Hey, man, how about coming on the show tomorrow? Sure. I said, can I have your number to call you? He's like, I just got a new phone yesterday. I don't know the number. I said, give me your phone. Okay. He hands me his phone. I call my phone from Vedder's phone. So I now have his cell number, which Merkin has used a billion times. And he came on. He was awesome. Remember?
Of course I remember.
He was so excited. I also know Theo. Theo's a great dude, man. I love that guy. I just can't see him. Wow. That is his band. He took off like 6 months of work to travel the world watching Pearl Jam with his wife.
Oh, he loves them. I mean, he snuck out. There's like a notorious story when he was still with the Red Sox, him sneaking out of a game or something to go see Pearl Jam.
Correct.
Well, I actually, in 2017, I used to work like the event operations for the Cubs, just like one of those seasonal guys. So being on the field, I know how those rows can get, like with the on the field during
concert. Correct.
So
all right, what do you think?
I don't think we're getting bamboozled.
You don't think we're getting Dan-boozled?
Dan-boozled, no.
Hoodwinked, whatever we want to call. Wow. Knowing it's Pearl Jam, like if Danny said it was the Billy Joel concert, I would say there's no shot that Theo would do that. Knowing how hardworking that guy is, high stress, that when he, first of all, was he drinking?
Yes, he was drinking. He had, this was Theo's pimp move, right? So like we're all drinking out of the plastic beer cups. Theo shows up with his crew and they have brown liquor. I'm assuming it was scotch or some kind of really nice bourbon or whiskey in glass. Like sifters. Like he shows up like it's literally his house with glassware to the row. Obviously, they had a skybox as well because it's Theo Epstein. So his friends were coming to and fro. That's another thing, that him and his friends were going in and out to the skybox to get drinks all night. So not only were there more people than seats in the row,
back and forth,
I had to constantly deal with the back and forth.
All right. Wayne, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to agree with you. He's got too many details for it to be a fake. I'm going to say it's the truth. Are you cool with that?
I am cool with that.
Danny.
Cap, Wayne, congratulations. You are right. You are going to the sanctuary for a round of golf. I hope you enjoy that, Wayne. That was 100% true story.
How about that? Theo bringing glassware down to the seat and trying to kick Danny out. Hey, man, have fun. Enjoy. Hold on, all right?
All right, perfect. Thank you, man. Thank you, Cap. Have a great day.
Have you ever told Theo that story?
I have not. I've never told it on the radio. I was hesitant to do it, especially when he was the big man at the Cubs, you know, because the Cubs are my favorite baseball
team.
Yeah,
hey, Theo, Danny Zetterman, I produce Cap J. Hood. Can we get you on? Nope. I heard that story you told.
Yes. Or how about he just doesn't let me in the ballpark anymore?
Exactly.
Hey, you see this face? Don't let this guy in. I'll add one more detail to the story. So the concert ends, right? It was a long night. The concert started a little late because it was raining.
Yeah.
But Pearl Jam put on the full show. Back in 2016 when they played there, it rained for like 3 hours. Pearl Jam paid the city out of their own pockets for the curfew rules. Uh-huh. So like there was no way Pearl Jam were not going to play the 3-hour show. So we're there. It rains. It delays things. We have the whole concert. Pearl Jam was amazing. Now you want to leave and go home. My wife, my brother-in-law, and I could not leave like everyone else. We had to wait to exit the row because security with earpieces in came down to get Theo and his crew. So we had to wait till Theo and his crew were escorted out and back through the friendly confines.
Like a football coach, like the assistants who are up in the box, they hold the elevator where the press box is, and they don't let anyone on until the coaches all get to leave first.
Exactly. I felt like it was Secret Service, right? He's the president of baseball operations, and he was the president of Wrigley Field. And he had security guard that had earpieces, one in front of our row, one behind our row, one on each side. And they're like, excuse me, sir, ma'am, you guys have to wait. And Theo and his crew, you know, filed out of the line. They're like, all right, you can leave now.
All right, I'll tell you a great story. White Sox are enlisting me to take the mound, by the way. You heard me right. White Sox are enlisting me to take the mound. We'll explain that, and I'll tell you a great story what they do if you're really big time as a play-by-play announcer, how they get you out of crowded stadiums. It's all coming up next.
You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and J-Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Rolling on, the Cap J Hood Show. Hoodie's on vacay. Back late next week. Danny is in with me today. Looking forward to that. So when you do play-by-play on a sporting event, like a college football game where there's 100,000 people there, if you're big time, they'll hold the elevator for you. If you're huge time, they have what's called an escape plan. So a buddy of mine who I had done some games with, he gets to work with Keith Jackson. May he rest in peace. That guy was the greatest. He said, dude, Waddle and I, they held the elevator for us at Northern. That was like a big deal. Oh, yeah, the crew's coming down because we would go down on the field and tape stuff so we don't have to wait for all the people that are using the elevator. They hold the elevator. The coaches get it first so they can get down to the locker room. And then the broadcasters. And so Keith Jackson's crew, He said, dude, we got done. Keith said, okay, as soon as we sign off, headsets down, be ready to go. And they come down. Mr. Jackson, we have the elevator waiting. Your helicopter is, you know, within a mile, not even.
Keith Jackson gets a helicopter.
Yeah. And they had state police waiting right at the base of the elevator. Cops take him into a car, shoom, right to the helicopter, right to the airport. Like, he's at the airport, like, in 15 minutes, and there are people still in their seats trying to get out. Gone. He said, if you're working with Brent, Keith, Al Michaels, escape plan.
I always wonder how that works for, like, an Al Michaels or a Chris Collinsworth or a Joe Buck. Like, when they're calling the night games and it goes into overtime or it just ends late, do they spend the night? I always wonder, do they have to spend the night then in that city? Like, deep down, is Al Michaels saying to himself, damn, I wish this game wasn't going to overtime because I have a 10 p.m. flight?
Charter.
Or, yeah, that's what so is that part of their deal? Like, Al Michaels, it's in your contract. You're calling Sunday Night Football, and you've got a charter home after every game and a charter there?
Yes.
Does that apply for all the A teams on all the networks? Tony Romo, Jim Nance.
Tony Romo, yes. Nance, yes. But, like,
Buck, Aikman, yes.
Those guys.
Collinsworth, Michaels, yes. Like, then how about the B teams?
No, absolutely not. Unless they're, like, Kirk Herbstreit, they'll put in a charter because he's doing game day in the morning, and then they got to get him to wherever he's doing a game. So they will charter him there, like Wheels Up or Net Jets or whoever it is.
So Desmond Howard's just kind of booking flights like us.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but it's crazy, man. If you're, like, at that level, like Boomer Esiason, so he does this show in New York, the morning show on The Fan. Well, he also does Monday Night Football. He does Sunday in the studio. So when he's doing a Monday night game, like he was talking on a podcast I was listening to, he had a game, I think it was at Kansas City. He had a game Monday night at Kansas City. He goes, the number one thing in my life is my family. The number two thing is my radio show. Football's third. So they have a charter for him. He does his show. They charter him to Kansas City. And then they take his order of what he wants to eat after the game. He gets back on the plane. They have his food, and they have the setup is he can lay down. It's not like a little chair.
Oh, get some shut-eye on his way to do radio.
And then they land him at Teterboro. There's a car service waiting. Takes him right to the studio. Bam. There we go.
Michael Strahan obviously has something similar because he's doing the Fox stuff with Howie and all those guys.
Correct.
And then he's got Good Morning America the very next morning.
Correct.
Like, you want to say, oh, man, that's a tough gig. Those are tough hours. I think we'd all take it if we could get it.
Michael Strahan's making, like, $20 million a year.
But for those guys, charter planes are more of a necessity than a luxury. Like, for Al Michaels, it's a luxury. You could put him back in the Ritz-Carlton for one night. He doesn't necessarily need to leave the minute the game he's calling ends. He wants to.
Right.
But, like, you know, send him back to the Ritz-Carlton for a night.
Sure,
he's not going to lose
sleep. That's happened.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Michael Strahan said one of the things he wanted when he finally got his big deal, he got divorced. He had to pay a ton of money, and then he said, okay, I'm locked in. He bought the condo he wanted in Manhattan, and he hired a guy who's his trainer and his chef. And so he gets up super early. The guy works him out for an hour, showers. The guy has his breakfast waiting for him. Car service picks him up to Good Morning America, comes back, takes a little nap, the guy has his lunch, and then like 4 o'clock he works him out again, cooks his dinner, and then goes home. That's his life.
That's crazy that he works out before GMA, because they wake up at like 3 in the morning for that show.
Crazy.
That's dedication. God bless him.
That's why he looks like he does. We'll talk with Albert Breer. We got to get to what I'm going to be doing with the White Sox. Real fast. Harding and Charlotte. What did you want to ask Danny?
Hey, Danny Z, so you're dealing with the master negotiator and Theo Epstein, and you're kind of clever in your own right. What would he have to have offered you to get you to leave that concert? Like, we're talking memorabilia, signed gloves, Mark Grace signed baseball. What would he have offered you?
I wouldn't leave the concert. Now, if he said to me, listen, I want to sit here with my friends, we need your seats, and he put me up in his suite or his skybox, done deal, I'm going. Or if he said to me, listen, I need these seats. Go wander around the stadium and watch the show. After the show, I'll let you meet Eddie Vedder. Done deal. I would have done that also.
Nothing memorabilia, no tickets, nothing else.
Nothing Cubs related. No, I'm not a big memorabilia guy. So, like, giving me a signed ball from the team wouldn't really do much for me.
Got you. All right, that's all I want to know. Okay.
Thanks, man. See you. All right, you got it. We'll talk with Albert Breer on the Bears and their pursuit maybe of Russell Wilson still, as Schefter has said, and NFL in 2 minutes.